such programs over the next 20 years spread pretty rapidly in the United States and then began to be emulated in Europe and in East Asia as well, Japan especially, and they continue to exist. They continue to exist today. As you might imagine, they're problematic in the sense that in one institution or another, they have a political dimension to them. But one of the most interesting discoveries of this science, technology, and society approach to looking at the relationship between science and society was to recognize that innovation, technological innovation, is not identical with invention. We typically use the words innovation and invention as if they were interchangeable, or at least broadly overlapping. And so we might talk about a computer innovation, and we might mean by that a new chip, for example. That the automobile is an innovation. The internal combustion engine is an invention. The internal combustion engine is an invention in a late 19th century workshop. Now, it becomes an innovation when it gets transferred into society. It is not a semantic distinction, because by identifying inventions and innovations, we leave out the key to what happens to an invention before it hits society. And that is that the invention is selectively implemented. That is, innovation, technological innovation, we have come to understand, is a social process in which the knowledge of scientists and engineers, often engineers, inventors, scientists and engineers, because sometimes you have independent inventors, that the knowledge of scientists, engineers, inventors have is selectively implemented, selectively exploited by managers in corporate or government agencies in pursuit of corporate or government agendas. So which inventions get translated into products, how rapidly they are developed, and the way in which they are introduced is a function of political values and social values. Now, this has nothing to do, of course, with the electronics, the theories underlying the way a cell phone works, but the form in which cell phones are introduced into society. The regulatory structure has something to say about that, for example. Corporate motives have something to say about that. How rapidly are we going to switch from analog cell phones to digital cell phones to third-generation cell phones to putting in cameras, etc.? So we take it for granted that technological innovation, which is the primary driver of social change over the last 200 years, and in the 20th century became increasingly dependent on basic science in order to drive the process of building up knowledge that could be selectively exploited, ultimately, science has become deeply entangled with this innovation process, which is substantially influenced by market values, corporate decisions that have to be anchored in what they decide will be profitable for them or not, and often political values. Now, it's not a one-way street, because society is very substantially responsible for modifications to corporate and government plans for how technologies will develop. And, for example, the internet, which in the middle 1990s emerged as a global phenomenon that no one had anticipated. The World Wide Net was invented at CERN in order to allow physicists in these widely distributed teams that we've talked about of particle accelerator teams to communicate and share results with one another. The World Wide Web and the internet have become global phenomena. The way that people responded to this innovation drove the way corporations decided that they could make money off those responses. In the late 1990s, this had dramatic impact on the American economy, and then the collapse of those expectations had a different kind. So we will need to revisit this question of whether scientific knowledge is really objective in a privileged way, whether it is truly to be understood in a socio-political context, or whether it is in fact outside that context and is selectively exploited on the basis of external criteria. We'll revisit this when we look at psychology and new social science theories of rationality. But it is a question that is deeply significant, and it is, a question that needs to find its place in an appreciation of the evolution of science in the 20th century.